Welcome, everybody. This is Mike Sledge right here at Renegade Broadcasting, renegadebroadcasting.com, and this is a special creative presentation. What I want to be doing on this special broadcast is reading the last book that I wrote, short story, and a couple of poems that I wrote. And making it available here at Renegade on audio for you, the listener, the Renegade family, because I do consider you people out there listening to this network family. You know, this is something that I wrote going back to 2010, 2011. And it's a story I wrote called The Last Garden. And at the time I wrote this, I really did not understand much of what I was writing. In the story, it was kind of like free-form thought that just came to me. Most of the writing that I've done, my first book that I wrote got published, Verses for the Down and Out, which I probably am going to read and make available on audio as well here at Renegade. Also, the band I was in, The Circle, the album Nietzsche's Rolodex, I'm going to probably try to make that available here at Renegade as well. I just want to dump all the stuff that I've done over the years and share it with everybody out there here at the Renegade family, because I feel like what we're doing on this network with all the great people on this network, I mean, Kyle Hunt, all the great work he does to put this network together, all the great research he's done, Dana, Siegfried, Lou, David, I mean, I feel like this network is operating on a level of creativity that is totally different from the other networks within the alternative underground scene. And I feel like what we're talking about is in many ways ahead of its time, particularly on philosophies of you know, the stuff about religion and spirituality, going back to our ancestral roots. I feel all that so far ahead of what other networks are doing, and so different and distinctive and special. And I feel like this is a magical place to be and a magical time. And I feel like that we might not even understand it now, but all of us together here on this network, I believe this down the road will be, this is a very important time and a very important project that we are all working on together here within the Renegade family. And so I wanted to share this. This is going to be a laid-back broadcast, but I've always wanted to read this story. I feel like this story would be better if I read it and almost like an audio book. And so that's what I want to share with you on this special report. I wrote this, I copyrighted it back in 2011. It's called The Last Garden. And here it goes. So enjoy. This is The Last Garden from yours truly. Chapter 1, Ab Initio. From out of the darkness, earth began as a giant rock, with red-hot boiling seas filled with molten lava. This was the byproduct of friction, collisions at high speeds. Smaller pieces of rock over time joined together from more collisions to eventually form what we now call Earth. After the collisions ended, a cooling process then began. As the process of cooling advanced, the vapors from the water escaped and formed the atmosphere of Earth. Clouds began to appear and the surface of Earth began to cool. Then the rains came. Clouds and storms began to occur. The entire earth became deluged with water from the floods. This process of flooding then formed the seas. They say the true age of Earth is over 4 billion years old. Many scientists believe it was formed around the same time as the solar system. Sometime during this process, life began to appear. The first life on Earth was single-celled organisms, which then over time evolved into multicellular organisms. Sometime after the multicellular process, more complex forms of life began to evolve throughout the oceans. Many species crawled from out of the oceans onto the land. It was during this time period that strange varieties of life began to appear all over the earth. This diverse life would eventually evolve through a complex chain of climatic events. As the chain of life started over from extinction, new life began to emerge once again. Over time, life became more advanced. Then the warming period of Earth created even more complex life forms. The Jurassic and Cretaceous periods gave way to a diverse mix of plant and animal life. Then new periods of cold eliminated most species unable to adapt to the extreme climate. Those species that adapted in turn evolved. It is believed that humans were around during the Holocene period, also known as the Last Ice Age. This was estimated to have occurred over 11,000 years ago. Even through this period of extreme cold, man somehow survived. As man became intelligent enough to use reason and logic, he then began to worship the heavens as God. The worship of the sun, moon, and stars began to take place throughout the land. Eventually, whole societies were formed on the basis of worshiping different aspects of the heavenlies. As this spiritual process advanced, radical differences between civilizations emerged. Astrology eventually evolved into a very intricate system of planetary studies. Eventually, the major religions of the world were derived from the worship of Jupiter. Other more esoteric societies worshiped the mystical powers of Saturn. They believed that Saturn controlled the process of time within our planetary system. Through this control of time, they could have and move humanity from a polychromic time-based society into that of a monochronic society, totally controlling mankind through the power of time, thus creating a human race dedicated to working within their matrix of control. Those who seek the powers from Saturn went underground and sought to rule over all the world. In the Gnostic text of the Nag Hammadi, there were entities known as the Archons. Many believe that the Archons were behind the evil in the world and secretly controlling many of the esoteric orders. Some believe that the Archons were responsible for the fall of man and believed in keeping man ignorant of the secret knowledge. As they became more and more powerful, so did the secret orders, seeking the total enslavement of humanity. The evolution process continued from the age of hunter-gatherer all the way to the Industrialized Revolution and beyond. As the human race progressed, so did their arrogance. From Rome to America, from the agricultural age to imperial communism, the world was becoming more and more violent and full of false pride. The wise philosophers of old said that those souls full of pride in their own ego are on the verge of a great fall. A great fall indeed. War after war for the control of resource and the expansion of empire began to consume the entire planet. Eventually, the whole world became entangled in a series of religious struggles. These conflicts over time would leave the planet in almost a complete state of desolation. Bloodthirsty corporations erected skyscrapers to glorify their power and compensate for a lack of true manhood. Giant monuments, buildings, and memorials, phallic shapes, seemed to rise above the earth, invading the heavenlies as if to give the middle finger to the creator of nature. The arrogance of man quickly gave rise to obscene greed and dark pleasures. Those with means lived all the way on the edge of nirvana. At the same time, the poor and working class could barely survive. The military-industrial complex increased in power. Throughout planet Earth, the weather patterns began to change, and the sun's energy became more concentrated on Earth. Earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, tornadoes, and hurricanes became almost a daily occurrence. But most of the destruction would come in the form of deadly coronal mass ejections. The sun, the real creator, the source of all creativity, the object of worship for many esoteric societies, eventually would become the main source of death through the blasphemous corruption of the man-made cycles of religion. The cycles of the sun were kept secret for the uninitiated for thousands of years. As the new solar cycle of destruction grew near, many within various esoteric orders had secretly planned their evacuation years in advance. This future period would become known as the time of desolation. Many good citizens warned the members of the establishment to change course. Those enlightened souls were only met with hatred and disdain. Just before the time of desolation, a secret society known as the Order of the L had infiltrated almost all of the industrialized wealthy nations of the earth. In the fashion of Joseph Stalin and Bolshevik power, raw hatred channeled through dark, secret, Jewish-controlled esoteric forces became the new law of the land. It was sometime in the beginning of the 21st century when the Order of L began to take over governments, and from behind the scenes, they plotted their millennia of destruction. The Order was a radical, apocalyptic, Saturnian cult. These were modern-day Bolsheviks who worshipped at the altar of eugenics and all forms of hate against the original people, the pagans, the Aryans, the creators. The men who entered into this nihilistic order of death were cold, calculated souls with a bloodthirst for absolute power and a bloodthirst to steal the knowledge of the original people and transform that original knowledge into a control grid of slavery. The powers of Stalin and that system of government looked like a church picnic compared to the diabolical souls behind this strange order of death. Like dark disciples dressed in all black, they quickly became the sick, possessed puppet masters of all of the world. Wars began to break out in the Middle East and quickly expand into almost all the nations of the world. As war expanded, a process of radical environmental change began. The Earth's rotation increased and time seemed to speed up. The days felt shorter, and the years seemed only half as long. This extreme change, combined with the death and destruction of war and tyranny, began to shake the souls of men to their very foundations. Depleted uranium weapons coupled with nuclear power plant meltdowns saw an increase in food contamination and cancer throughout all the Earth. As radiation entered into the planet's water supply, fresh water became a more important resource than even gold. With the passing of each day, it was becoming increasingly clear to any intelligent mind still left on the planet that complete desolation was drawing near. With the arrival of the Order of the L, resistance was becoming more and more futile. Those who opposed this dark order found little refuge within the realm of underground social justice movements. Many secret societies were created to challenge the authority of the order. Almost every single fraternity would be infiltrated and eventually destroyed by the military police arm of the order. They were known as the Chimera. From out of thousands of secret societies, only one would remain to challenge the power of the Order of the L. They were known as the Ondine Society. Their secrets and ancient esoteric knowledge had been successfully handed down to the new generations of brothers. The Ondines would eventually build an underground society that would rival the Order of L. Many believe that the Ondines were able to survive only because they were created by a secret brotherhood dating back to the ancient mystery schools. The Ondines were quickly becoming underground royalty as their mystique became that of legend, rising to new mythical heights. The secret of the Ondine Brotherhood had been hidden within the esoteric world, even more so than that of the Order of the El. Just as many of the religious books of the old were written in code, and true nature hidden from the eye of the uninitiate, so were the secret books of the Ondine Society. These books were compiled using the technique of writing within the exoteric, while the true secret meaning remained hidden within the esoteric codes, which only high-level initiates could properly decipher. High-level adepts within the society were highly trained students of the Sefer Yetzirah. This was the foundation of their esoteric encoding. This knowledge was made available only to the ascended ones within the society. The Order of the El, as well as the Ondine Society, were both adepts within the same school of esoteric knowledge. But the intent of the two, however, could not be further apart. The Order of El had been baptized in fear and hate, while the Ondines were enlightened agents of peace, brotherhood, and the positive synthesis of the dawning of the new man. Those souls who would later survive the time of desolation now searched tirelessly for their salvation, redemption, for God, creation, creativity. Having given up on the institutions of man, society now descends into chaos, violence, and even greater destruction. Only those with the true vision of a just society can now save the fallen human race. Chapter 2, Lifting the Veil of Malum. As wages declined and prices increased, the citizens became more and more disenfranchised with the ruling class and all of their elitist governing bodies. The average work week was around 84 hours. This left the working class tired physically and broken spiritually, having no time for family. The traditional family became completely non-existent. With the family destroyed, the soul of man now exists only as a relic of a past time. Almost the entire human race now lives as total slaves for the elite ruling class. Having no future, the spirituality of the common working class had become rooted in drugs and cheap booze. The life of the worker class outside of work was spent plugged into various forms of propaganda technologies, which filled their minds with the ridiculous ramblings of the state. Most of the working class never slept more than a few hours a week, fueled by stimulants prescribed to them by their corporate doctors and psychiatrists. They had devolved into total mind control slaves. Like Pavlov's dog, they now wait in long lines, drooling with excitement, giving their minds and souls to their elite programmers. Most of the ruling class were now members of the Order of the El, and all of its controlled colleges and governing bodies. Like true psychopathic bureaucrats, they live a life of luxury, while the rest of society build their false utopia like meth-addicted worker bees for the hive. The top scientists within the order had invented various types of mind-control drugs for the purpose of creating an even larger pool of total working-class slaves. The intelligence level of the new worker class was that of someone left only capable of performing their specific task within their new job in the new slave state. Each worker's role within the state was determined by a psychiatrist from human resources employed directly by the company they worked for. These top scientists began working directly for the Order of El years before they gained absolute power. In secret laboratories all over the world, they slowly and methodically refined their dark sciences. Almost all of their experimentations were in the field of mind control. This was all done in the name of creating the ultimate technological control grid, along with the creation of a total obedient slave working class. This process created two very different types of human beings. The ruling elite class had evolved into taller and more intelligent people, while the working class became shorter, weaker, and almost unable to even form a simple sentence. This was mainly due to the nutritional inadequacies that faced the new worker class. The elite ruling class were allowed to eat non-hybrid organic meats and fruits and vegetables, while the working class were forced to consume bizarre and strange-looking GMO and hybrid food sources created by these demonic Bolshevik minds who were then paid off by their evil Zionist scientists of the state. The only true organic seeds and farms preserved by the ruling class were kept hidden from the masses. The nutritional produce and meat were secretly harvested, only to be consumed at unholy feast by ravenous souls who cared nothing for humanity, just their own pleasures of flesh. The Order of El knew that their greatest mechanism of control was of the world food supply and the sources of fresh water. Organic food and fresh water were now the most important resources of the world, even more important than that of money or property. Eventually, the battle over these very resources would spark the ultimate revolution for the souls of mankind. Over time, many within the working class began to secretly quit consuming the state drugs, and underground gardening was quickly becoming a revolutionary act. It seemed as though many within the new worker class were becoming enlightened once more. Much of the information and resources given to the working class were being done through the Ondine Society. As technology and information became more accessible to the masses, many within the elite establishment were becoming more and more concerned with the Ondines and their association with the worker class. This troubled them greatly, as the working men and women began to question the policies of government, state religion, right down to the very purpose of life itself. A new movement was now on the rise, and for the first time since the Order of the El took power, hope and a new spirit of empowerment began to emerge. Unfortunately, along with this new spirit of hope would come destruction. The Order of El had been planning a mass genocide of the Earth's population, set to take place just before the coronal mass ejection. The Order of the El knew from the secret ancient tablets when this day would take place. This would be the final solution for mankind, and it was secretly being formulated by their top generals and scientists. The El also had plans to evacuate Earth and head away to places like Mars. They believed that Mars was the original birthplace of their ancient race. But this was nothing more than the inversion. This was nothing more than a copy, a Xerox, a theft. Like thieves in the night of their Zionist nightmare, they stole from the original concepts of the original Aryan race and tried to duplicate this and fabricate it with false bloodlines and a fake history, and even take over Mars in direct defiance, giving the middle finger to the original sons of creation. This belief was the only thing that they held sacred. A final sacrifice to their dark god of war would soon be initiated. Their plans for a utopia were now at hand, as the time of desolation was quickly approaching. Forming the Pax Pacis, the Order of El planned its final solution for the original Aryan mankind from its true seat of power hidden deep within the esoteric world. The Ondine Society then began a recruitment process throughout the world. The society had by this time become a serious threat to the Order of El, even challenging their power in certain regions. They began trafficking in non-hybrid seeds, water filtration devices, organic foods and potions and elixirs that could protect oneself from radiation, depleted uranium, and other forms of manufactured Zionist death. They even showed people methods of building underground shelters to protect themselves from the coming coronal destruction. You see, to the Andans, the sun was their ally. To the Zionist controllers and dark fabricators, the sun was their enemy, their adversary. Underground greenhouses and organic gardens began to emerge in mass. The teaching of growing agricultural farms, alternative medicines, and ancient forms of alchemy began to spread through an elaborate system of underground esoteric schools. More and more, those within the working class became educated on the crimes that had been perpetrated against them by the Order of the L. The news of revolution now being waged by the Ondines had reached the highest levels of the Order of L. Orders were issued to the Chimera to begin the process of eliminating anyone caught with organic seeds, fresh water, vitamins, or any type of Ondine literature. As the persecution became intensified, so did the quest for freedom and justice. For every action is an equal and opposite reaction, and that reaction would come in the form of true and total revolution. The numbers within the Ondine society had grown dramatically within the past few years. They had now become the new freedom fighters for the new working class. The structure of the Ondines was such that no one could ever really know who held higher rank within the Brotherhood. This made it almost impossible for the Order of El to infiltrate any chapter or secret Ondine school. Each chapter of the secret society was completely compartmentalized from the others. Their orders and secret agenda papers were delivered to them through a complex system consisting of secret couriers, intellectuals, and mystics. This was a type of modern underground railroad of esoteric knowledge. The members of the society knew their mission was noble and just, so they never questioned the orders given to them or of the structure of the Brotherhood. There were rumors of a very powerful financial interest working behind the scenes and financing the Ondines, but nothing substantial could actually ever be validated. It was also said that the elders within the society had visited a sect of the Ondines in order to pay homage to the birth of a young child. This newly born child, a boy, was said to be destined to become a leader within the new Ondine Aryan society. They called this child the Young Prophet of Nature. His name remained unknown, but it was clear to all within the society that this child was nothing short of miraculous. Not like the old Abrahamic fabrications, this would be the new, pure, natural, spiritual form of a real, true, earth-born Messiah. In the midst of the time of desolation, hope and the promise of a future peace had finally been born. Lada Mbagrut. The child was named Vishnu. He had been protected by the highest levels within the Ondine society. Vishnu had been taken from his parents at the time of birth. The identity of Vishnu's parents were kept secret in order to protect them from the Order of the El. Vishnu was then taken to an underground mystery school to be raised. This school was where the society sent the chosen seeds to be raised. Like gifted starseed children, they were trained in the most secret knowledge of the ancient and esoteric world. Vishnu was at the top of his class within the mystery school. It was clear that he had skills of a future leader, born into a grand destiny. The elders made sure he was cared for and nurtured up until what was known as the Age of Leadership. Vishnu definitely exhibited all the signs of high-level genius. At the age of 5, it was said that he had read the complete history of the rise and fall of the Roman and American empires. He also showed a great affinity for the arts and literature. As the years passed, Vishnu was given more and more freedom to teach others within the mystery school system. Finally, at age 18, he was sent off to study at the Invisible College. Here, he became well-versed in alchemy, duality, and dialectic philosophies. He had become adept in all of the secret sciences. Even his professors were in awe of his vast knowledge in every area of study. Vishnu also developed many long-term friendships while attending the Invisible College. He was a very charismatic speaker and a character that was almost magical in charm. The top masters within the society continued to monitor his progress in life. It was becoming more and more evident that they had made the proper selection. Vishnu truly had the divine spark of Aryan nobility. Vishnu had reached the age of leadership. He was taken to the most influential of all the invisible colleges in the world. It was named the School of Dorje. It was named after the Tibetan thunderbolt, which was used in ritual magic. In Tibetan Buddhism, the thunderbolt stood for the male energy. For this reason, the college only consisted of enlightened students that could trace back to the time in the intellect of Thor. This was the college that was educating the future leaders of the coming new golden age. These future alchemical politicians, philosophers, spiritualists, psychics, and mathematical wizards would ultimately become the new chosen ones, who would eventually inherit what would become known as the new golden age. The School of Dorje existed underneath the streets of what used to be the holy city of Jerusalem. They were protected by the priesthood class from all the old religions. This area had become what was considered now a new neutral zone, much like what Switzerland once was for the international elite. Switzerland was eventually looted by the Order of the L, and all of its money and gold seized to finance their Zionist Bolshevik empire. There was a type of understanding between the different denominations of those old Jupiter-based religious orders. They had put aside their past disagreements and joined together for now to defeat their mutual enemy, the Order of the L. The Order of L did not have the power to completely destroy the old religious orders, so they used them to promote their agenda in those parts of the world where the old priesthood class could be used to convince their respective cultures not to resist the tyranny of this vile order. The Andines took advantage of this situation, for they did not trust the old priesthood class either. So they used the priesthood class' hatred of the Order of the L to successfully create an underground mystery college in what used to be the very seat of power for all the old religions of Earth, now was becoming transformed back to its original roots of nature and natural law for the original creator race. Now the Andines would educate their future prophets from underneath what was the spiritual center of the old world. The elders within the Andine society were now poised to take their seats upon the throne of a new golden age. As a young alchemist within the Invisible College, Vishnu was able to completely skip many of the lower degrees of enlightenment and move quickly to the top of the entire college in terms of esoteric knowledge, as well as that of the alchemical world. One area of study that Vishnu was particularly adept in was that of the area of harmonics and of the planetary system. He was quickly able to understand the ancient harmonic frequency codes that were used in the old mystical architecture, particularly in the ancient city of Atlantis. The young Vishnu could even recite the entire secret history of Atlantean culture, science, and technology. It was known within the secret mystery schools that Atlantis most likely was destroyed as a result of divisions created by a dark and unholy lust for power. The leaders within the different factions then went to war, using highly advanced forms of weaponry. Some of these weapons were nuclear. As a result, they eventually destroyed themselves in what was considered by many scholars to possibly have been the most advanced civilization in Earth's history, was then destroyed and laid desolate. This history of Atlantis was very important to Vishnu, because he believed that history always repeated itself. Knowing the cause of the fall of Atlantis, he could help in one day preserving the paradise of the original Brotherhood. Vishnu had by this time completely become a master of both alchemy and magic. He learned the ancient sciences of Karnak and was able to perform the secret magic of the High Masters. Much of this ancient magic was considered to be the source of many of the miracles within the biblical age. Now Vishnu walks around the campus of Dorje, anointed, sacred, a new, illumined man. Graduation had now arrived, and Vishnu was chosen to address his graduating class. He made his way to the stage and then the podium. He then positioned himself behind the microphone, ready to address his class like new royalty. His robe draped over his body like a modern-day prophet as he began to speak. Here we stand in the midst of a great destruction and chaos. The ruling order have already decided their fate, but also maintain the belief that they control ours as well. They use the forces of duality to conquer and devour the souls of mankind. They laugh in the face of death, but cry in the presence of life. Control and fear are their poisoned manna, and hate their weapon of choice. Their souls non-existent as they look toward the knowledge of the fallen ones. Spiritually blind as they seek out the wealth and property built by those cast out of their inferior kingdoms. Now removed from redemption, love, and the life force of the universe, they seek out new souls, new slaves for their dark sorceries and twisted pleasures. Now here we stand as the new prophets, the new disciples of life and love, the new shepherds of a new dawn. Our mission is clear, our outcome predetermined through the ages, and our victory certain. We shall initiate the divine spark of a new enlightenment, a new lightning bolt blitzkrieg, a new day for the new man, a new birth of freedom, peace, and prosperity for the world. Now is the time. Now is the time for unity and love of the original race, the original creative people. Now is the time for that new divine revelation instead of revolution. Now is the time for a new freedom, a new way of living, a new promise for the future of our brotherhood and our humanity. The entire Invisible College was on their feet. A roar of applause erupted through the college like the sounds of boots marching toward total revolution. Vishnu then slowly walked off the stage as if floating above the ground like some type of modern-day savior. As he left the crowd, he then walked down the long hallway of the institution into a time of desolation. The young prophet will now begin his ministry for the new Golden Dawn. The Rise of the New Prophet. The world had by this time completely become economically lower than the poorest of third world nations. The economy had collapsed years ago. Manufacturing or any type of production had become obsolete in what was now a non-existing job market. The world's ability to produce food had completely become devastated. This was due to the fact that huge multinational corporations had completely destroyed traditional farming and replaced it with a system of synthetic production. Only hybrid and GMO foods now remain. This so-called food source ultimately created foodborne cancer viruses and deadly forms of sickness that saw a decrease in the world population by almost 80%, while there was an increase in the population of the demonic sick and twisted order of the ill. As people from all over the world became sick and died from this unholy food source, many began to believe that this was a manufactured plague for the purpose of population control. It now seemed that the Order of the Ill's plans for mass genocide against the original creative race, the Aryan peoples, had taken an even more diabolical turn for the worst. The entire world was now like a giant prison with the Chimera monitoring a person's every move. Only one revolutionary group had survived the time of desolation. The Ondine Society proved to the global elites that they were in fact capable of surviving the storm. The Ondines were now engaged in what they called Earth Avenging. They would throw seed bombs almost everywhere throughout the world. Fruit trees and vegetables would suddenly appear and begin growing in random places. They would focus much of the seed bomb campaigns in the poorer communities. The people within these communities would quickly take as many fruits and vegetables as they could carry back to their homes. As soon as these unauthorized food sources were discovered by the Chimera, they would then be sprayed with a pesticide that would kill fruits and vegetables on contact. They would also poison the soil, so future planting in that area would be impossible. The battle between the Chimera and the Ondine Society had really intensified over the past decade or so. The Chimera would use violence and destruction to protect the centralized powers of the Order of the Ill, while the Ondines never used violence or any negative force for power or conquest, but only their ancient esoteric knowledge for the betterment of the race. The Ondine Society, on the other hand, used love, positivism, and seed bombs like modern tactical weaponry. Like anarchic gardeners, they pursued the lofty objective of feeding and educating the downtrodden masses. The contrast between the two could have never been greater. The Chimera were fueled by hate and fear and Zionist propaganda and Abrahamic dark covenants, while the Ondines pursued the enlightened path of protecting life, bettering of the self, and living off the free-flowing energy found in the power of nature. Many within the Ondine Underground changed their names to that of a symbolic ideal or belief that reflected their calling within the Brotherhood. Vishnu, however, kept his real birth name. He, after all, was a chosen seed. He was now 33 years of age and wore violet clothing. He spoke what sounded like the language of the gods. He was considered by many to be some sort of new prophet, or at least a very important leader within the new underground Aryan resistance. The high-ranking members within the Order of El believed that Vishnu knew of a secret garden or a food forest somewhere on Earth. They also believed that Vishnu was being secretly funded by a rich oligarch, who also might be from their own ranks as some type of double agent. According to their own surveillance, the mysterious oligarch went only by the name of Mandorla. The rumors of some secret oligarch funding the resistance was indeed true. Mandorla had been privately financing the Ondine Society for years. He sought revenge against the Order of the Ill for committing mass genocide against the original race. He despised the fact that the Order of the Ill was willing to sacrifice everyone except for their own sick Zionist twisted bloodlines and their divine committees, which was only around 300 members. Using the moon as their secret observation point, the Dark Order plotted their final solution against the original race. This even included loyal members of the Order. Mandorla had learned this truth years ago, when he was just a young man. After the time of desolation was activated by the Order of the Ill, they then deserted the planet, escaping to Mars through their very own secret space program that they had stolen from technologies from the original Ondine Society. Now, after their departure, they continue to use the moon as an observation base to monitor those left behind. Mandorla also had the belief, based upon his connections within the secret space program, that they had completely miscalculated and that the Earth would someday become a paradise once again. He believed that the promise of the original Odinists, the pagans, and those of the natural sciences would once again come to rule the earth, and that new golden age was close at hand. That from out of the chaos created by the false elites, the forces of positive energy would someday replenish this planet, known simply as Earth. Vishnu had never met Mandorla in person. All communication was done via multi-layered secret channels. Former intelligence agents who had defected after being left behind began to work for the Ondine Society. It was now the eve before their first meeting. From behind the scenes, deep within the world of secrecy, Mandorla had been working on a project to create a new paradise on Earth. This project was known as Project Griffin. Only Mandorla and a few advisors within his inner circle knew of Project Griffin. Project Griffin was to be almost a recreation of what man had been before the Great Fall. A type of esoteric Eden, a modern paradise. Project Griffin would incorporate ancient alchemy, principles of gardening, combined with new sustainable technologies. Huge systems of aquaponics were also employed to irrigate what would be the largest organic growing operation in the history of the world. All of these systems, ancient sciences, would be employed not only potentially to feed all the world and for the original race, but to also revitalize and repair the ecosystem of our true creator god, Earth. Mandorla had discovered, through working with his top scientists, that the Earth was most likely a single living entity. He theorized that the devastation in recent years caused by floods, earthquakes, volcanic eruption, tsunamis, were merely responses from a living spirit, moving in self-defense to protect itself from the environmental wars waged against it by powerful Zionist enemies who had fabricated their own history to destroy the original human race. Enemies like greedy corporations, depleted uranium, pollution, wars, and the use of deadly pesticides through commercial agriculture. Mandorla believed that by showing that there still were loving spirits within the human race, the Earth would then work with those spirits to bring back that lost paradise, that lost world before the Abrahamic covenants of blood, cannibalism, faith. The time that existed before the tragic fall of man, when man fell into the grips of a false, fake god. The day of the meeting had finally arrived. Vishnu agreed to meet Mandorla's agents at a local basilisk bar. Basilisk had become the drink of choice for the vast majority of the drinking world. Basilisk was for the most part a cheap, neutral grain spirit liquor. Although basilisk appeared crystal clear like water, it was as strong, if not stronger, than moonshine. The masses who drank this strong potion didn't seem to care. With nothing left to live for, most people left on Earth drank basilisk with impunity. Vishnu took a seat at the bar. The bartender then staggered toward Vishnu like a true basilisk junkie.
You look like you could use a drink.
Vishnu looked up nervously and responded to the dazed and wasted bartender.
Go ahead, give me a shot of that juice.
It had been a very long time since he had drank a drink of basilisk. He quickly threw back the drink. His eyes immediately became red as blood. His heart rate began to speed up intensely, and his palms became drenched with sweat.
Yes, that's it. That's goddamn basilisk, all right.
Then Vishnu felt a hand tapping upon his left shoulder, representing the left-hand path.
I take it you are Vishnu.
A male voice proclaimed, standing directly behind Vishnu. He looked like a common street bum. He had a thick beard that had not been maintained well at all. His clothes were like those of worn rags, his shoes barely holding together.
I go by the name of Sylph, and this is my partner Agni.
Agni looked just as bad as Sylph, except that his eyes were like two beautiful kaleidoscopes. He then looked over at Vishnu and said,
We have come to take you to Mandorla. He is eager to talk with you. We will explain everything in more detail after we board Prana.
Vishnu looked up at these two very strange-looking men and asked them with a low, shaky voice,
What is Prana? And where are we going?
Sylph then explained,
Prana is our flying craft. It will carry us to Mandorla within minutes. But first you will need to take this pill. Your body is not accustomed to anti-gravity, and this will help in dealing with some of the side effects associated with this type of travel. I just hope you haven't consumed too much basilisk.
Vishnu then looked down at the bright silver pill in the palm of his hand. He nervously tossed it to the back of his throat and chased it back with yet another shot of basilisk.
All right, let's go.
Agnal smiled at Vishnu and responded in good humor.
I like your style, brother.
The two agents then smiled as they walked Vishnu out of the bar. They then drove him to somewhere in the outskirts of town. They finally arrived to Prana. It was a beautiful craft. Prana was oval-shaped and bright blue. Vishnu stood there in front of this amazing flying machine in total disbelief. They then entered into Prana. Five bright red seats were arranged in a perfect circle within the center of the craft. There were no monitors, steering devices, or any other type of controls within Prana. Only a single lonely white button placed in the center of the circle to power the engines. Agni then pushes the button, and their seats begin to rotate in a clockwise direction. The outside of Prana then begins to rotate in a counterclockwise direction. Vishnu fell back into the bright red seat in a daze as a green mist clouded his sight. Prana was now in flight. Vishnu was now one step closer to the light. The secret legend of paradise would soon be a reality for the young prophet. The Magic of Mandorla. When Vishnu finally awakened from his medicated state, he saw that the green mist had lifted. There was a window directly in front of his seat. As he looked out the window, down upon the earth, he saw nothing but darkness. There were almost no lights to be seen for miles and miles. The world had slipped into complete poverty. Electricity now was reserved only for those connected to the ruling class. This was proof that the almost total collapse of modern society had been accomplished. A tear rolled down Vishnu's face as he continued looking out the window. His positive energy and violet clothing couldn't prevent this dark reality from sinking in. Agni then looks over at Vishnu and pushes the white button. He then informs him that they had arrived at Project Griffin. Vishnu was blindfolded before they exited Prana. He was then led from the craft toward a giant bamboo mansion where Mandorla dwelled. Mandorla called it his eco-mansion. They entered into the mansion and walked a blindfold Vishnu through the long hallway to Mandorla's office. They opened the door to the office and stood before Mandorla. The blindfold was then removed, and Agni instructed Vishnu to take a seat in front of Mandorla's desk. As Vishnu looked around the room, he couldn't believe his eyes. The room was completely
natural. There were materials or any type of man-made chemical within the gigantic room. It was all consisting only from nature. The large desk in front of him was made entirely out of bamboo. In fact, it appeared as if the whole mansion was made out of bamboo. All power throughout the mansion was solar. In the corner of the room was a spectacular wine collection. It was a vast array of fine wines. It looked as if every single variety of wine was represented. Hundreds of bottles, intricately organized in almost an art form, from Merlot to Pinot Noir to port wines, even varieties of sherry were represented in this elaborate collection. Mandorla sits behind the huge bamboo desk with a gentle smile upon his face. The window just behind him has a pristine view of a bright green paradise. You could tell from the view that Griffin had been going on for quite some time. Mandorla then looks over at Vishnu with a bottle of organic Pinot Noir in his left hand. "How about a drink, Vishnu?" "Trust me, this is not your average wine. This wine was made from the best grapes on earth. Maybe even the universe, for that matter. You see, Vishnu, I am a man that notices the details. You see, details are the most important thing one can notice. For example, I can tell by the color of this Pinot that it is, in fact, one of total perfection. In the taste is perfection as well. No bitterness, and that ever so slight sweet ending on the back of your palate. When drinking this particular wine, your tongue delights as this holy grape juice runs down the back of your throat." Vishnu then looks up at Mandorla and replies, "Well, if you truly are a man of details, then what are the details that make so important to be brought here to Griffin? Why am I here? Who am I?" Mandorla's eyes light up like two rising suns. He looks down at Vishnu and says, "Yes, yes, details, details. For instance, you only wear violet. This is the most important detail about you. Yes, details, violet. The power of red merging with the sanctity of blue. Violet in many of the ancient spiritual practices was also a focus point for meditation. The blue energy. This tells me that you are a man with prophetic powers. The red. Also, you are a pure soul like the blue. You have a loving heart. You are a man of complexity. Violet can also represent sorrow. You are a man of diverse emotions, deep intellect, real diversity. It is you who will one day sit on the throne of Griffin." Vishnu looks up at Mandorla, completely stunned and in shock from what he had just heard. "I think I will have a drink of that holy wine after all." Mandorla then laughs as he pours the wine into a shiny, tall, crystal glass. "Here you go. Here you go, my son. Take this sacrament of life. Now that you are feeling more relaxed, let me share with you our true history." Vishnu then sipped his wine and listened to Mandorla in almost a trance-like state, to the words of this old gray-haired wisdom. Mandorla looked like some old type of pagan prophet who was forced into the wilderness, surviving only on wild locust and raw honey. He stood around 6 foot and had a long gray beard. His hair looked like fine silver and stretched down to his shoulders. He wore a white robe made out of hemp with gold trim. There he stood like Merlin,
as he began to educate the young prophet. You see, the devil is always in the details. While most people now understand that there is an elite group who control the entire world, and now also Mars and the moon, they do not understand that the so-called elite are the slaves themselves now. While it is true that they have the chimera to police us and incite fear, and the threat of violence to keep the so-called slaves in line, but what most people don't know is that even with this greenhouse project on the Mars and Moon, their food and water supply is not sustainable. And there is the oxygen problem. Yes, yes, details, details, see, my son. You see, the Order of the L truly believed that they were the descendants of an ancient alien race. They believed that Mars, not Earth, was their true home. So beginning with the Zionist and the fakes and the frauds, they began to develop a secret space program. Secret societies were then formed to conceal their true goals. The most important goal being the fact that they wanted to develop the technology to go back to their supposed true home. But their quest to go back home meant offering Earth up as a sacrifice. It meant sacrificing nature for the synthetic. The god of war demands the blood sacrifice. So everyone, except the elites within that twisted order, have been offered up to Mars. I used to be part of this alliance. Then one night I felt a force inside me, a positive energy. It spoke to my soul like a karma alarm clock. I could then see the light. It was bright, clear, and brilliant. When the time of desolation began, instead of leaving with the Order of the L, I left for my underground palace. I stayed underground for almost 4 years, never even seeing our glorious sun. When I emerged, my soul knew that this planet, Earth, is the anointed, chosen planet, and that the true race is Earthbound. This is the planet of life, and the synthetics are of death. Mother Earth had very bad cancer, but now she is in recovery. You see, my son, details, details. Project Griffin is that new beginning. It is that new dawn. My son, we are headed back to the true garden. A European garden of mystical roots. Vishnu sat there in disbelief and then began to speak frantically. Then, they will just come back and kill us all. They have the technology to come back. They have prana, just like us, right? Mandorla then began to laugh in a hysterical manner and looked over at Vishnu as if to yell checkmate. I have their frequency weapon. I helped invent it. They left it in my control. I am the only one now with total control of the weapon. It is called the Ouroboros. Ouroboros was what gave the Order of the L total supremacy. They never even thought of the possibility that one of their own believed in life, not death. They now know that they are in fact trapped in a cold, isolated, doomed existence. No birds, no life, no soul. Just remnants of a lost, fabricated civilization remain. Only a lie is their reality. Their daily life now consists of using what limited science and resources they have left at their disposal, which they originally stole from us, to try and figure out a way to possibly return to Earth. Yes, yes, details, my son, details. Yes, on how to come back before they die in that cold city of Sephiroth.
The so-called chosen are now in a race for their own existence. But just like their ancient relatives from that dark planet of death, they too soon will perish. Vishnu finished off his glass of wine and stood up, reaching toward the wine bottle on Mandorla's desk. Mandorla then smiled and turned to Vishnu.
Yes, this is a much better drink than that of Basilisk, no?
Both men then turned to one another and toasted to Project Griffin. Mandorla then looked out the window behind his desk. His eyes were as bright as the rising sun.
Now let me show you the true Eden!
The Chemical Wedding. Sylph and Agni then escorted Vishnu along with Mandorla to the entrance of Project Griffin. They walked down a long bamboo hallway that led out of the Eco Mansion. Vishnu couldn't believe the detail and artistry of the mansion. Bamboo, clay, connected together with hemp rope and various natural forms of adhesives. The mansion was huge. It must have had at least 15 to 20 bedrooms. Brilliant sculptures and artwork decorated the interior. As they stepped outside toward the entrance of Griffin, Vishnu felt like he had taken a time machine back into the days of the book. The ancient pagan esoteric books, hidden from the profane. The age when the earth was new, healthy, and strong. A time when pure innocence walked upon its surface. The green landscape looked magnificent, like a beautiful oil painting. Only this was no painting or movie. This was reality. In the midst of the decadence, hunger, destruction, despair, and loss of hope set this lush green paradise. This surreal garden, the true Eden. As they walked up to the gate of Project Griffin, Mandorla turned to Vishnu like a possessed wizard or Merlin, with a gentle and peaceful smile.
This, my friend, is true paradise. This is only one example of what we can bring forth throughout the entire world. When future man looks down on Earth from Prana or some other even more advanced craft, he will see seas of green, seas of life, of love, of passion, and peace. He will see only what the gods could ever have imagined. This can be a reality for all of mankind. If we choose life over death, and a vision of peace over hate, we are the agents of this new change. We must bring forth this new revolution of the soul. We will cure the earth of her cancer. We will bring the nutrition for the longevity of the new Superman. We will grow the vegetables and the fruits for the new dawn. This, my son, is the key to it all. This is the new freedom. This is life. This is hope. This is earth.
Vishnu continued to look around Griffin in total amazement. What he was now witnessing was so unbelievable he couldn't even put it into words. There was such a diverse variety of plants, vegetables, fruits, hanging from enormous trees, bright green vines bearing heavenly grapes, huge softball-sized tomatoes, every type of fruit and vegetable you could imagine. Mandorla, standing in front of Vishnu like the wise elder he was, began to explain the science behind the new alchemical Eden.
What we have here is all natural. It's an organic approach. No chemicals or deadly toxins. Just nature taking its miraculous course. First and foremost, we have our most important element here, the soil. Just take a look at how vibrant and alive the soil is.
Go ahead. Go ahead, my son. Details. Yes, details. Run your fingers through its magic. You see, it is a moist and living soil. You create soil like this without digging into our mother's flesh. Instead of following modern agricultural techniques of the industrial age and of Zionist corporate farming, which led up to the time of desolation, we sought out the wisdom and skills from some of Earth's first civilizations. Civilizations that existed before the Abrahamic blood covenants. We then took the knowledge from those time periods and then blended them with the techniques of modern science through the Ondine society we have today. As we walk through this majestic garden, you will see multi-million dollar aquaponic systems winding their way throughout Griffin, fertilizing and bringing life to every living, growing form of life here. What we have built here is, in my opinion, more mind-blowing than that of the great pyramids that used to stand in Egypt. For the only mystery here is life. Take a deep breath. My son, details, details. Take another deep breath, and another, until you feel that blue energy. Go ahead. The air quality here in Griffin is far superior than any place on this earth. This is because of life. The plants, trees, vegetation, it creates the rain, the semen of nature, if you will. This operates in the same way the rainforest did before they were destroyed for the Zionist evil corporations, building factories and cattle grazing lands to feed these arrogant societies just before their fall. That arrogance that paved the way for the genocide of the indigenous peoples all over the world eventually led to their own downfall. Yes, yes, my son, details, details. Nature, nature. Yes, those quiet wars, not covered by their corporate-controlled propaganda machines. Race after race, systematically removed from the face of the earth by madmen, megalomaniacs, and all their perverse minions. All done in vain to only destroy the original master race which we have preserved here at Griffin. Like I said, we will create life, not death. Let's take a walk up to the top of our main tank, which powers our aquaponic system. The men then walked up to the top of the mound, where the main aquaponics tank was located. The mound looked like it was in the shape of a pyramid, and it was quite steep. After finally reaching the main tank, Mandorla looks over to Vishnu with tears in his eyes and begins to speak in a soft, sober voice. This mound upon which we stand was once an old, ancient Celtic burial mound. Right under our feet are the bones of past warriors who gave it their all. In my estimation, they were the first in this part of the world to do battle with this evil. I can't think of a better way to honor these dry, dead bones just under our very feet than to create new life on top of these very dry, dead bones. This is life that they would be proud of. Their spirit is now with us. Look down from here. Look at our creation. As Vishnu looked down onto the garden, he saw row after row of workers winding through paradise, collecting fruits and vegetables in beautiful brass bowls. They were all working with smiles on their faces. They were focused, yet at peace and alive. Most importantly, they were free. This was not some cubicle in some stale office on 52nd floor of some corporate Jew skyscraper, but rather this was nature. And their work was natural. When one is working not for wealth or status, but rather for life and love, the production is even greater than that of all the economic models and philosophies ever devised by shallow corporate minds. This was not socialism or capitalism. This was life and love. One people, one race, working with the positive energy and getting closer to the life force than ever before. Indeed, this is natural, and this is nature. Mandorla then instructed everyone to look outward past the garden to a vast forest sitting like a natural city in the distance. He looked over at Vishnu.
Yes, let me walk you through the circles of life. This whole system is designed around what is known as the five circles. But first, let me explain the science behind the aquaponic system. This is a huge tank that contains many different species of fish, representing how we are leaving the Piscean Age and how the fish can't survive without the water and the bearer of the water. The Aquarian Age now dominates and gives life to the fish. The Aquarian Age, the Aquarian Aquarium now gives life to Pisces. We now have melded and merged with nature, and now we have perfected the natural law. We feed the fish the duckweed, which we grow right here in Griffin. They, in turn, consume the weed, and their waste then filters out of the tank through those bamboo pipes downward into the garden. This acts as the fertilizer for the fruits and vegetables grown here. We have three more such tanks overlooking the other circles of life throughout Griffin. The fifth circle, though, needs no aquaponic system, as it is totally self-sufficient on its own. Only the law of nature is required there. The tank must have been the size of a small lake sitting on top of that mystical Indian ground. Mandorla then continued. Now we shall walk through the five circles of life. I will explain each circle in detail as we walk through Griffin. Now on to the five circles. They then grabbed onto the bamboo railing and began down the steep mountain. The five circles of life now await. The five circles of life. They finally arrived at the first circle. Mandorla began to explain the science, along with the esoteric knowledge within the first circle. Here we stand within the first circle of Griffin. Here within the first circle are all the spices, healing herbs and plants that have medicinal as well as spiritual properties. You have probably noticed that the first circle is located close to the mansion and the other living quarters of Griffin. This is because everything that we need as medicine and for cooking are close by for convenience. Here we have basil, oregano, fresh mint, ginger, thyme, all the wonderful spices needed for our fine cuisine that is prepared fresh daily. Over there we have lemons, aloe vera, limes as well. Like I said before, everything has been planned properly, right down to the very last detail. Yes, my son, details, details. But this time, God exists in the details, not the devil. As we move forward through the first cycle of life and the first circle of life, we have vegetables, squash, zucchini, sweet potato, cabbage, broccoli, every variety of fresh vegetable you could ever imagine. As Vishnu looked at all the fresh vegetables winding down all around him, he became dumbfounded by their size. He proceeded to ask Mandorla how they grew to be so large. How do you get such huge vegetables? I mean, what is the secret to growing these true, true superfoods? Mandorla smiled and looked over at Vishnu like some sort of mad scientist. Dear boy, the secret is not complicated at all. Just good farming. I haven't even put hardly any of my fortune into Griffin. Just millions, that's all. But I intend to green the entire world and bring the true race back to its true source of creativity, nature. Expanding Griffin to all the inhabitants on Earth.
and I have the resources to do it. The secret, you ask? Well, let me see if I can properly explain this to you. Besides the vast network and sound growing skills, like planting nitrogen-fixing plants next to fruit trees and so on, it's all about the true esoteric secrets. The Philosopher's Stone, what many called manna during the false scriptures, what just might have been the power for the source of the ancient powers that grew the world into a paradise before it was subverted by the fake alchemy of Moses. You see, it's like liquid gold. This alchemy can not only enhance the growing process, but can also bring you to a higher level of spiritual enlightenment. The ancient Egyptians believed that if it was properly consumed, it was capable of transforming the individual into a complete child of light. We are children of the sun. We are pure light beings. The secrets, the true secrets, not only of Amun-Ra, but what was before. This substance can cause one to become a complete child of light, or a pure light being. This substance is the secret to it all. They say it might have caused the levitation of the ark, but that is fantasy. It is a fabrication from what we, the true people, created before that time. Many believe that the ancient Hebrews, like Moses, knew this secret alchemy, but in fact that is a fabrication. It was stolen from us. They have subverted and took what our knowledge and our science and have used it to destroy humanity instead of to preserve the original people and to grow this planet the way it should be done by the law, natural law. Not only was this esoteric knowledge passed down through the ages and kept a secret within the mystery schools as well as with the Ondine Society, but it is the power source for prana. It is also how those twisted bastards were able to get to Mars and possibly beyond. It defies gravity. I will show you this operation later. Let us now continue on the tour of the circles of life. Vishnu had heard of the strange alchemy before, while he was a student in the Invisible College. For years, the belief in this substance was considered just a bunch of New Age garbage by the mainstream of society. But now he has seen it with his own eyes. Prana, the miraculous size of the vegetables. What was laughed at by the many was in reality an esoteric secret kept hidden from the uninitiated. The Order of the Ale used this technology to escape the time of desolation and return to their so-called ancient home. All of the pieces of the puzzle were now falling into place. Vishnu could only wonder what the next revelation would be. Mandorla then pointed his finger toward the field between the first and second circles. He then began to explain the purpose of what appeared to be giant water towers with bamboo pipes spiraling from the bottom of the tanks down to some type of collection pool. Here is where we collect the water. We create vast amounts of rainfall through our secret knowledge of rainforest science. The water collected here is then in a spiral motion delivered into the drinking pools below. It's the spiral movement of the water that is important. The life force of the water is increased as it spirals and spins circle after circle until it is finally collected into the pools. This, my friends, is the true holy water. This is the true fountain of youth. This water is the best on earth, I can assure you. Once again, life, living water, living food, life is the key to Griffin. We collect all the water here and from three natural springs from within the fifth circle of life. Yes, my son, water, the fundamental building block of life. They all stopped and drank from one of the drinking pools. Vishnu had never tasted water like this in his whole life. It tasted sweet, and you could feel the positive energy flow through your body with every swallow. As Vishnu was drinking the water, he couldn't help but notice the gigantic tree just in front of him. The branches almost gave cover to the large portion of Griffin. The roots of this gigantic oak tree were like dinosaur tails, winding their way throughout paradise. He noticed that the tree had all types of different colored leaves. The leaves blended together like a perfect manifestation. Everything here was together as one within the natural system of the tree. Doves sat upon its branches. Even an eagle looked down upon him. Vishnu began to walk around the tree. He saw a huge owl looking at him directly in the eye, as if to show he was a source of wisdom and illumination. The tree seemed to be radiating energy, positive energy. Vishnu began to laugh. It was as if he and the others were overcome with pure joy and happiness, but not in a silly or ridiculous manner, but rather a spiritual kind of joy and enlightenment. Mandorla then began to talk about the tree, while trying desperately to suppress his almost childish laughter.
"Well, you see, this tree is proof that we have a future. The oaks, the solid wood, this is a tree of life. It is proof that the Creator, the grand architect of the universe, has not forsaken us. We planted this tree only 10 years ago, and in that 10-year period it grew to the size of a tree, almost 500 years old. It is a truly miraculous tree. Not like the promise of redemption through the revelation of the rainbow. What we have is a promise within this magical tree. I believe that the doves never lie. What is happening here at Griffin almost defies what seem to be the laws of nature. Anything can grow here, and miracles live here. This is the start of the new harmonization between the species. As miraculous as this tree of life is, we must move on to the next circle of life, for each circle has a new miracle. Vishnu could barely move away from the tree. As he looked up the tree, he noticed a large treehouse. He then turned to Mandorla. "I want to live here, within this new tree of life. With your permission, of course." Mandorla looked back and spoke. "My dear son, this house was built just for you." Vishnu was in complete silence. He was overwhelmed with the whole experience of Griffin thus far. Mandorla then yelled back at Vishnu, "Come on, I have new miracles to show you, my son. Details, details." They then moved on to the second circle of life. While approaching the second circle, Vishnu saw the most beautiful woman that he had ever laid his eyes on before. She had long brown hair that flowed down to her waist. A beautiful purple flower hung above her right ear. Her skin was like honey, glistening in the sun. Her eyes were blue like the sky on a clear summer's day. Her legs were long, and her body perfectly crafted. Her lips were bright red like heavenly fruit, ripe with love. She noticed Vishnu and slowly walked in his direction.
"It is a pleasure. I have heard much about you from Mandorla. My name is Bastet."
Vishnu was in a trance. He just couldn't take his eyes off of her. He knew right then that he had just met someone very special. Mandorla then smiles and tells Bastet that she will have plenty of time at the Rawl feast to converse with Vishnu. Bastet then smiles at Vishnu, then slowly walks back to the fruit tree to collect more figs. Vishnu then watches as she looks over her shoulder at him, slowly collecting the figs and placing them ever so gently into her brass bowl. Mandorla just continues to smile as he whispers to Vishnu,
"Don't worry, my son. Bastet knows all there is to know about you. She loved you before you even knew that she existed. She will be your dinner date tonight at the Rawl feast."
They then continued on and entered into the second circle of life. Mandorla then proceeds to explain the second circle.
You see, this is where all the fruit is grown. Apple trees, oranges, plums, cherries, strawberries, mangoes, watermelon, everything. I see that you already noticed the figs.
Mandorla then laughs while looking at Vishnu, and he then continues.
Yes, figs. And over there, grapes. Yes, grapes. Like I told you earlier, when you drank the sacrament, the finest organic grapes ever made. They are grown especially for our wine collection. Wine is like the blood of nature. It purifies the soul and causes one to reflect upon his life. It is good for one's soul, but now it is time to move on. We must hurry, my son. So much to see. So much more to see.
Then they walk behind the fruit, towards the pecan groves. Mandorla then proceeds to enlighten Vishnu.
Here we have pecans, almonds on the ground, peanuts, almost every variety of nut. You see, when you love the earth, you can truly grow anything, anywhere, no matter the geography or climate. All varieties, all types. Here, come over here.
They then enter into a large bamboo building. Inside, they are making different types of butter. Mandorla then grabs a jar of pure almond butter from the production line.
Here, have some fresh almond butter, my son.
Vishnu opens the jar of almond butter, dips his fingers into the butter, then tastes it. It was rich, sweet, and very light. This was by far the best type of butter he had ever had. Mandorla then takes the jar away from Vishnu and says, "Only a taste, my son. Don't want to ruin your appetite for the raw feast tonight."
Mandorla laughs with delight as they exit the building. They now move from the second circle onward towards the third. They then enter into the groves. The pecan groves feel as if one walking through a tunnel. As they wind through the grove, they then enter into a beautiful wide open field. On the field are goats roaming free like the happy children of Griffin. They run through the open field, grazing on the bright emerald grass of paradise. Mandorla then walks Vishnu over to yet another large bamboo structure. Inside, Mandorla walks to one of the women who is busy cutting cheese from an enormous block of cheese at the end of the production line. He takes a piece of the fresh goat cheese and hands it to Vishnu. Vishnu takes a bite. His eyes roll back. This cheese is like consuming angel clouds, light, creamy, and exquisite. Mandorla then turns to Vishnu, holding another piece of goat cheese in his hand. He then begins to describe the next section within the third circle of life. If you like the cheese and wine, just wait until you see what is next in store for you.
They then continue walking through the beautiful green open field, watching the grazing goats consuming the heavenly grass. Vishnu then notices row upon row of tall, erotic-looking plants not too far in the distance. He then realizes as they get closer that these are hemp plants. The amazing scent of cannabis permeates the summer air. This wonderful scent gently brushes against their nostrils as a clean breeze blows by. Mandorla then explains to Vishnu why hemp is so vital to Griffin.
You see, the hemp is good for making clothes. The clothes that I am now wearing are in fact made from hemp. The rope that we use here is made from hemp. Even the seeds are good for medicinal purposes and overall healing of the body. Some even say that hemp oil might even cure cancer. The Creator surely doesn't make mistakes, and hemp is always a very important sacrament, one for the body and spirit.
They then walk through the tall rows of hemp as that delightful smell continues to pleasure their senses. The hemp plants then begin to thin out. As the plants slowly fade away, Vishnu then notices another wide field emerge. Tall golden rows of wheat and hops fill the landscape surrounding them. The wheat, hops, and also barley cover the field like a transcendental blanket of life moving back and forth as that summer breeze blows by, like the breath of angels.
The smell from the wheat and hops fill the air with perfect whole grain goodness. This is truly the way the gods intended earth to be. Mandorla then looks over at Vishnu and points to yet another large bamboo structure. Follow me. I don't know about you, but I am feeling extremely thirsty today. They walk upon the bamboo structure and enter into it. Vishnu was yet again in total amazement. It was a fully operational bar. Tap after tap of different types of wheat beer, lights, darks, ales, as well as many other varieties of lagers and cider. Mandorla then points toward the bar laughing. Take a seat, my son. Belly up! Enjoy a fresh pint. The gentleman behind the bar was an older lad with gray hair and a look of someone who had a real gift in his appreciating a fine drink. He proceeds to pull the tap, and a golden-colored beer fills the pint glass. He tops it off and sets it in front of Vishnu. Vishnu picks up the pint glass and drinks it down. The beer was made to perfection. It was like the nectar of the gods. Vishnu and Mandorla stayed for a few more pints. Mandorla proceeded to show Vishnu the beer-making process. The brewery behind the bamboo bar produced these almost orgasmic lagers and ales. Only the finest organic wheat, barley, hops were used to create these special brews. The third circle had been fun for Vishnu. The open field, the great ales and beer. Vishnu was now dying to know what was ahead for him within the fourth circle of life. What would it be? What type of food would it produce? Maybe it would be some type of alchemical circle of life. Mandorla then guided Vishnu through the remainder of the wheat field within the third circle, with Sylph and Agni standing by his side, like New Age Secret Service agents. All of a sudden, at the end of the field, Vishnu noticed giant tanks chained to the ground. These tanks were enormous in size and had a certain glow about them. As he got closer, he began to inquire about the tanks. But Mandorla just stood there like some type of Greek or Roman god with that mystical smile on his face. They finally had arrived at the tanks. That golden glow surrounded the tanks like some type of cosmic energy. Mandorla then began to explain the purpose of the tanks. My son, these tanks have inside them the most important secret of Griffin. That is the secret alchemy I spoke of earlier. This is that great secret passed down through the ages. First from Egypt, then Greece, then Rome. This is liquid gold. Right here in front of you is the secret of all longevity. This is the secret behind all the secret orders and their ancient quest. Behold the true alchemy. Vishnu then understood why the tanks were chained to the ground. This was the alchemical process that creates levitation, that creates flight. This chemical was very powerful. When this substance enters into a vessel of any kind, the levitation process begins. Mandorla then continues to explain the alchemical process. You see, each one of these tanks contains sea salt, extracted directly from the Dead Sea. The huge complex over in the distance warehouses the salt. We have huge prana craft that fly for the collection process. This process is quite simple. Rainwater is the key to the alchemical process. We collect the rainwater within these giant tanks, but the rainwater must never touch the earth. If it touches the earth, it loses its magic. The water that falls from above is highly charged with the secret energy of rejuvenation from below. That which is above is that which is below. Once this energy is grounded, it ceases to have the spiritual energy. So the true science of nature is that which is above is as that which is below. So the rainwater is collected until the tanks are full. Then they are mixed with the salts. They then are combined with yet another ingredient. This secret has been kept hidden within the highest levels of the Ondine society. Soon you will become enlightened to the great secret. This process has been kept secret for thousands of years by the various mystery schools.
All of these ingredients are then mixed together within these large tanks. The giant mixing blades inside the tanks begin the alchemical process. The pH balance is then measured until the proper levels have been reached. A settling process then occurs. The mixture is then left for about 2 days. After this mystical substance completely settles on the bottom of the tanks, the remaining water is then separated from the mystical stone. The stone is then washed and ready to be used for prana, or for use as a fertilizer within Griffin. This is the process of the supreme secret of Griffin. This is the ancient manna. This is the manna of the ancients. This is the most important part of Griffin. The Order of the El thought they had figured out the secret of the ancients. They believed that Venus and Mars were the original high places of those fallen masters, but they did not know the whole truth. Only those within the highest levels of the Ondine Society know the true origin of our past enlightenment. This is why I call this ancient alchemy ritual the Gnosis of Saturn. Saturn, the real center of power for the universe, the real high place of the ancient masters. Now, through the Gnosis, we will once again create paradise for all mankind. Every one of the five circles of life are living monuments to pay homage to the power within the rings. Evil men have abused those powers from that mystical point. Now we will take those powers back from the Order of the El through the Gnosis and turn our world back to polychronic time instead of being governed and controlled by monochronic system and monochronic time. This can only happen by reversing the powers of Saturn. We are reversing that every day here at Project Griffin. As we enter into the Golden Age once more, we will use the new enlightenment that will come down to our pineal gland like an energy waterfall from that mystical energy source that surrounds us all. Vishnu was beginning to see the big picture. He knew from all he had learned within the Invisible College that this was the foundation of a new system for the new Golden Age. Mandorla then continued to explain the true path of the new enlightenment. You see, my dear son, you already have eternal life. Everyone has eternal life. Your physical body is merely a vessel to hold your spiritual energy. When the flesh dies, your energy force then simply goes back into that cosmic fountain of life energy, only then to cycle back for the return. This is what many refer to as the wheel of life. As new alignments of the planetary forces emerge, a new energy of truth will once again make itself available to those with the knowledge on how to retain it through the pineal gland. This is like your spiritual eye within your brain. This is the energy that flows from above into the top of your head, spreading enlightenment and truth. Only the ancient orders have kept these abilities alive. They kept this knowledge secret from almost all of humanity for the single purpose of control. To use the forces of the cosmic worlds to create monochronic prison time for us all. A society constrained by time, by schedules, work weeks, and ridiculous holidays. All to control the thinking and the creativity of mankind. We will now, through Griffin, transform this planet back to polychronic time. A system that values the freedom of the individual, that uses all the creative powers of humanity for the purpose of establishing a more just world. Mandorla then pointed over at yet another giant bamboo complex that warehouses giant barrels of the Philosopher's Stone. They then enter into the complex. Mandorla then hands Vishnu a vial of this liquid manna. Vishnu also handed a vial to Sylph and Agni, and Iso took one for himself. Mandorla then instructs them to follow him back outside. They were then all told to consume the contents of the vials. Each vial contained precisely the proper dosage. A few seconds after consuming the liquid alchemy, they begin to levitate off the ground. Their bodies rise high above Griffin. Mandorla then instructs Vishnu on how to maneuver himself while in the air. You first need to have a destination in mind.
Simply use your third eye, if you will, to guide yourself to your new destination. Whatever destination you have in mind, your body and spirit will be taken there. So let us all now agree on a destination. Let us go to the fifth circle. Just look in that direction. Allow your energy to take you there. They then begin to fly in the direction of the fifth circle of life. Vishnu could see all of Griffin and beyond. As they flew through the clear blue sky on a beautiful summer day, he could see the entirety of the fifth circle. It looked like some type of prehistoric rainforest. Vishnu began to feel a cool mist on his face as they floated above. The fifth circle could generate its own rain. Just below them are a series of gigantic waterfalls, along with three enormous crystal blue springs. They decide to land below. They slowly begin to return to land. They now stand on the edge of the springs, with the giant waterfall rushing down into the crystal waters below. Vishnu looked down at the bright blue water. He then put his hand into the spring. Mandorla told him to have a taste of the water. Vishnu cupped his hand and dipped it into the spring. It was cold and clean, and his soul began to feel alive. The water seemed to cleanse his entire state of being. He could see that large pipes were pulling the water from the springs and into the other four circles of life. As he looked out into the rainforest surrounding them, he could see all different types of species of animals. A deer was drinking from the spring just across from them. The sounds of machinery, people, or violence now were non-existent. No signs of hate or despair detected. Only a picture of serene beauty and the soothing sounds of nature exist here. Undefiled by greed, control, wars, and time. Agni then informed Mandorla that it was time to return to the mansion. It was now time to get ready for the raw feast. Mandorla looked over at Vishnu. They all then began to levitate once again, high above the fifth circle, back high above Griffin. They directed their energy back to the mansion. Vishnu had tears in his eyes as he looked down upon paradise. The green lush gardens and grass were even more amazing from up above. They were now there, the new prophets, flying high above, looking down below. Feast of the Lapis Lazuli. It was now the evening of the raw feast, also known as the Feast of the Lapis Lazuli. The residents of Griffin began to enter into the grand banquet hall, located on the first floor of the Eco Mansion. Bamboo chandeliers decorated with precious gems and stones hung from the high ceiling. The dining table was long and elegant. It was made entirely from clay, brought to Griffin from somewhere in rural Georgia, located in what used to be known as the United States, now simply referred to as Regional Zone 5. The table was almost the length of the banquet room. A window the size of the room located across the room from the table had a spectacular view overlooking the fish, oyster, and mussel ponds on the back side of the Eco Mansion. The banquet room was full of paintings and sculptures from several famous artists from within the Ondine Underground. The guests of the feast walked around the room, sipping on fine organic wines and various types of exotic cocktails. There seemed to be hundreds of different types of hors d'oeuvres, like raw sushi, gigantic oysters on the half shell, fresh goat cheese, and many varieties of fresh War of Enlightenment. It was becoming crystal clear that the talent and leadership for the new world were here in this banquet room. The future leaders, artists, writers, philosophers, poets, and architects were all present at this very feast. Project Griffin was bearing good fruit indeed. The mansion bell began to ring. This signaled the beginning of the feast. Everyone took their seat at the long table, trimmed with gold and rare gems. There must have been over 200 guests seated at the table.
Mandorla began to address the guest at the table. "Welcome to the raw feast of the lapis lazuli. In the center of the table is the stone known as the lapis lazuli. It symbolizes success and talent, a type of divine power. In the East, it represented the power of healing, especially for the eyes. I now give a toast for divine favor, love, and to that of a grand vision only seen by healthy eyes. Here tonight, we have the divine spirit of that vision. Now let us eat and drink to our new future, to a rebirth, a new earth, a new world, to Griffin and beyond." Everyone then raised their glasses and gave homage to the feast. The food then began to be brought out to the table. There were beautiful women bringing out this fine cuisine. Each woman server had long, beautiful golden hair and bright blue or green eyes, their bodies wrapped in fine white hemp robes. They looked like angels serving up the perfect meal. The golden and silver platters were full of all types of raw fruits, mushrooms, fish, vegetables, all seasoned to perfection. This food needed no cooking as nature had prepared it to perfection. Everyone at the table looked down at their plates with almost orgasmic smiles. One could sense that there was some type of spiritual power or divine force present at the table. The guests then began to communicate with each other telepathically. Mandorla sat at the head of the table like a transcendental blue blood royalty. As the guests continued to consume the perfect food, their chairs began to levitate off the floor, rising 4 or 5 feet above the table. Laughter then began to fill the entire banquet room. The laughter was like that of some sort of cosmic intercourse. The feast went on for hours. Vishnu was seated directly across the table from Bastet, and she could not have looked more beautiful. She was dressed in a long blue dress. She gazed into Vishnu's eyes as they finished off their fresh pomegranate dessert. Mandorla then stood up to officially close the feast. He proceeded with the prayer to Artemis. "We now end this feast, giving our respects to Artemis. Artemis was the ultimate deity of the natural world, symbolizing birth and fertility." As Mandorla ended the prayer to Artemis, he looked at Vishnu and Bastet. He then smiled and filled the entire banquet room with almost a hypnotizing laughter. As the feast ended, the guests began to filter out of the banquet room. Vishnu and Bastet left the room hand in hand. Bastet looked over at Vishnu and asked him if she could accompany him back to his mystical treehouse.
"I would be delighted if you walked me to my new home. The candles that light up the garden are unbelievable at this time of night."
Vishnu then took her hand, and they walked into the night. The moon shined down on Griffin like a perfect diamond. The candles released just enough of a glow to light up that pathway of paradise winding its way through that perfect garden. As they walked, they had many conversations. They discussed their childhoods and family histories. They talked about how the earth had changed dramatically from the age in which their ancestors lived, and the desolation that was caused by wars and nuclear power, greed, and Zionist troubles. They talked about the overconsumption that took place just before the time of desolation by a greedy, arrogant, subhuman race. They both knew that their inner spirit, that they were meant to be together. This would be their night. Artemis had been summoned, and the power of fertility set free. They finally arrived at the treehouse. Vishnu looked into Bastet's eyes and gave her a gentle kiss on the lips. They entered into the house and eventually into the bedroom. They disrobed. Then Vishnu lifted Bastet up, and they both gently fell on top of the bed. They made love on a physical and cosmic level. Their bodies lifted, began to float over the bed while wrapped around each other as if they were one spiritual being. The sounds of their love filled the room as that mystical oak tree shook ever so gently beneath the waxing moon.
the prophecy of Hanuman. The moon slowly faded away, bringing on the arrival of the morning sun. The sunrise shed its golden light upon Griffin. As Vishnu made his way from the bed to the window, he slowly reached for his violet robe. All of a sudden, he heard what sounded like a monkey. He could feel the branches of the giant oak shaking the house. He could see the leaves on the tree move as chaotic energy passed from one branch to another. He then looked over at Bastet, still asleep in the bed. Vishnu then began shouting, "Bastet! Bastet!" She then jumped up from the bed. "What? What is it?" Vishnu explained to her that he heard what sounded like a monkey frantically moving up and down the giant oak which surrounded the house. Then they both heard a tap on the front door. They then went to the front door, opened it, and looked inside. There was an odd-looking monkey just sitting by the door. His hair was caramel-colored, and his eyes were bright blue. Bastet then began to explain to Vishnu that this monkey was a spiritual advisor to Mandorla, and that he was considered to be a type of spiritual psychic to many within the Griffin community. His name was Hanuman. Hanuman had many spiritual gifts. He had become a hero within the community. This hero had almost godlike status. It was placed upon him mainly because of the now infamous brewery incident. A fire developed one day during the distilling process. Hanuman was able to tame the fire without water, sand, or any type of substance. He was able to put out the flames by staring into them with his piercing blue eyes. The energy that he emitted counteracted the fire, saving the brewery. This was when Mandorla discovered the true powers that Hanuman possessed. Hanuman became very close and extremely loyal to Mandorla. For this reason, Hanuman could roam freely throughout Griffin. The fact that Hanuman was an acting manic meant there was trouble heading toward Griffin. Bastet went on explaining to Vishnu that they needed to escort Hanuman to the mansion to see Mandorla. Only Mandorla could properly interpret Hanuman's psychic energy. The three then began their morning journey toward the mansion. They finally arrived at the mansion. Agni was there to greet them at the entrance. Vishnu requested to meet with Mandorla, and Agni agreed to show them to Mandorla's office. As they entered into the office, Hanuman became very sedate and calm, almost in a trance-like state. Mandorla then looks over at the three of them with a very sober and focused look. "I see that Hanuman has brought the two of you here. This can only mean that the Order of El are ready for the final battle." Mandorla then looks down at Hanuman, who is sitting at his feet. The two of them begin to gaze into each other's eyes. They become completely one as their minds seem to melt together. You can feel the vibrations from their energy traveling through the room. A golden type of aura then surrounds and appears to surround their physical bodies as their light bodies merge into complete spiritual oneness. They continue to glow like golden clouds. The entire mansion begins to vibrate. Mandorla and Hanuman sit frozen in time like stone, Greek, or Roman statues, their eyes completely motionless as their pupils grow larger and larger, eventually becoming black as they download each other's thoughts. Mandorla then abruptly stands up. He motions to Agni, who is standing in the back of the room, like a New Age mafiosa. Sylph then arrives and quickly exits the office with Agni. Mandorla then abruptly moves away from Hanuman, with a look on his face that neither Vishnu or Bastet had ever witnessed before. "The time is now! Yes, yes, indeed, the time is now. The moment has finally arrived. Hanuman has foretold of their return and attack upon Griffin. We must now prepare for the final battle of the Piscean Age. After we are victorious, and we will be, we will then truly usher in the Aquarian Age. Then we will finally be able not only to restore Mother Earth,
but also restore the integrity of time and freedom to all throughout the planet. One day we will take our new energy all the way back into the original source of creation, which sits in the center of the galaxy. Now is the time. Mandorla then looks down at his desk, as if contemplating the future of humanity. Time to prepare Ouroboros for battle. Mandorla runs over to Vishnu, grabbing him by the arm, then looking at Bastet, and Hanuman yells, "The two of you, go back and evacuate to the fifth circle. I must now prepare our defenses for battle." Mandorla and Vishnu walk down the long hallway of the mansion to an elevator which takes them below to the earth, the Hollow Earth, to a secret underground bunker. Mars, the god of war, once again demands blood, but this time the only sacrifice will be that of the Order of the El. Isolating Ba. It was approaching midnight, and Vishnu and Mandorla strategizing beneath the earth within the underground bunker. The information coming in was describing fierce battles all over the earth between the Chimera and the secret Ondine forces. The Ondines were now on the rise in many of the zones previously considered to be Chimera strongholds. As the information continued pouring in, it was crystal clear that the final battle was now underway. Either tyranny under the Order of the El would now be consolidated by demonic forces controlling our Divine Mother from Mars, or a new enlightenment and freedom of spirit from nature would abound on her once majestic soil. Mandorla then began to describe how he thought the final battle would take place. "It will be around 6 in the morning when their forces arrive. This is because there are 4 periods in the day when the planetary harmonics are deactivated for the changing of energy for the next cycle. These time periods are at 6 in the morning, high noon, 6 in the afternoon, and then midnight, of course. They don't have access to prana here on Earth. We are the only ones left with that technology here. They are not aware that I have yet another Ouroboros here at Griffin. Their prana crafts that got them safely to Mars are not equipped to re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere. They sabotaged the Ouroboros system that the Chimera had to protect themselves from a possible military coup d'etat. Because they have no knowledge of our secret new Ouroboros system, they plan to attack with helicopters, fighter jets, and other outdated types of weaponry. Now they sit on Mars desperately trying to upgrade their prana technology for their return. Fools! Fools! For now is our time. Now is the time." Vishnu and Mandorla then leave the underground bunker and make their way to the top of the mound high above Griffin. They climb to the top of the mound for a strategic position. Like new gods, they observe the paradise below. They now stand on top of that ancient mound, like warriors of old, avenging those dry bones beneath their feet. It is now nighttime, and the sky is completely clear. They could see all the stars, the moon, and all the cosmic brilliance that the universe had to offer. The moon shined down on them like a type of energy sacrament before battle. Mandorla then smiled as the light of the moon covered his body, bringing a divine glow to his long white beard. There he stood like a modern-day Merlin defending the new round table. It was now 4 in the morning. Nothing but the sound of fish swimming gently inside the aquaponic tank could be heard. Finally, 6 had arrived, and the sound of jet engines and helicopters could be heard moving in on them from a distance. Mandorla then raised his left arm with a fist clenched. With his right arm, he held a bucket of water raised high in the air, symbolic of Aquarius. "Now is the time spoken of by the ancient masters. The stars and planets are now perfectly aligned.
The prophecies from all of the holy books are now being fulfilled. The entire history and advancement of all civilizations for the last 6,000 years was for this very moment in time. This is truly sacred ground. This is not the last garden. This is the beginning of a new earth and a new people. Now we stand ready to fulfill our secret destiny. Earth will be victorious. We will be victorious. Vishnu then looked up and around for the jets and helicopters. The sun was beginning to rise on the horizon. As the sun rose, the jets and helicopters appeared from above. They were quickly approaching. Mandorla then begins to mumble, almost like he is speaking in tongues. Then his speech becomes clear as he looks into Vishnu's eyes like a possessed wizard. It was written that only a remnant would remain. That remnant, my son, is here within Griffin. It was also written that after the final battle between good and evil, a new earth would rise from the ashes of the old. Just like the story of the phoenix, rising from out of the ashes of chaos and destruction, only to be reborn. We are now the phoenix, carrying mankind into the illumination of a new era. Mandorla and Vishnu continue to stand defiantly on top of the mound. The jets and helicopters are almost directly above them. Then, from underneath the mound, a series of green lasers shoot into the morning sky. The jets and helicopters fall from the sky, just as their evil masters fell from the heavens and onto the earth. Rejected, expelled from the true glory of creation. In less than 3 seconds, the final battle is over. Their old weaponry completely vaporized, and only the ashes of their defeated empire now fertilize the new life coming out from the gardens of paradise of Griffin. Mandorla stands upon the mound overlooking Griffin like some type of Greek god after battle. It appears that the world is now free to begin again into the next age. Now governance over this new earth will be required. The inhabitants of Griffin will soon become the new ruling class on earth. The process of expanding Griffin throughout the rest of the world had now begun. The news of defeat quickly reaches the Order of the Ale back on Mars. A round table of elites gather underneath the giant dome city, which they call Sephiroth. They all just sit there silent, gazing into their round table of doom. Nothing but bad karma and negative energy now consume their cold, mundane existence. Many of them fall back into their chairs, gazing hopelessly into the dark space. Some say that their collective screams could be heard throughout the cosmos, entering into the soul of the enlightened man. For now, their very souls have been separated from the earth. The last days of the Order of the Ale exist on a dead planet with finite resources. Their judgment may now be final. The New Synthesis. 33 years have now passed. The son of Vishnu and Bastet now sits upon the throne of Griffin. His name is Lingam. Mandorla passed on to the next level of consciousness. Just 3 years after the final battle, he was 183. Through alchemy, he was able to live longer than anyone from his generation. Vishnu had now become the wise elder behind the seat of power. Lingam was tall, with long golden hair and blue eyes. He was beloved by all the people of Griffin. He was very kind and a loving king, and there was great abundance within the kingdom of Griffin. Griffin had expanded paradise to consist now of one quarter of the entire earth. This part of the earth is now green and fruitful. In Griffin, hunger, poverty, violence, hate, and envy have been completely eradicated. The only job for the people of Griffin is to care for the earth and to love their neighbor unconditionally. Lingam had begun to travel throughout the many different regions of Griffin using prana. There had been pressure put on him by many intellectuals
within the kingdom to create a monetary system as well as new governmental institutions. But Lingam rejected those beliefs in favor of freedom and self-governance. He truly believed that the new enlightened man was capable of making his or her own choices in life. This, after all, was the whole purpose of the new world. At 33, Lingam now sits upon the throne, looking peacefully upon the Aquarian age. Life on Earth had been revived in a very expedient manner. It seems that the Earth responded to the love energy emanating from this new humanity with total kindness, bearing much fruit for the people who walked upon her soil. Ever since the end of the final battle, there had been no earthquakes, floods, tornadoes, tsunamis, volcanic eruptions or hurricanes, or any type of natural destruction coming from Mother Earth. There was a new philosophy for humanity, but no religions of any kind. Only the path, the left path, of true spiritual enlightenment existed. With the new earth now in proper balance and the new man perfectedly evolved, there was no need for weapons or standing armies, but this reality was only true for those who lived within Griffin. The world outside of Griffin was a totally different reality. Humanity was still in a state of chaos and destruction. The elders within these regions had to contend with roving mobs killing in the name of Mars. While Griffin appeared to be the new heaven, the outer regions were hell. The inhabitants of the outer regions could see the prosperity and peace within Griffin by watching the Grimoires. The Grimoires was a future technology similar to television. Like rabid dogs, they would angrily glare into the screen, praying to Mars for the fall of Griffin and its young beloved king. The outer regions rejected the concept of the new man. They still prayed out to the gods of war. They still believed in money, greed, hate, violence, and the promise of a strong centralized state. They were still looking for a strong man, the smoke and mirrors of dictatorship. They still believed in the false dream of materialistic paradise, ruthless, underground, Bolshevik societies and mafia families controlled what little resources were available within the outer regions. Thousands starved to death every day, while others were killed by random acts of senseless violence. The Chimera had been able to keep their power and continue to use force and fear to control this abominable population. Because of their hate and rejection of love, these souls were cut off from the promise of peace and left to die within the outer regions of hell. Hate was their sacrament, and tyranny their only god. Lingam monitored the outer regions continuously. He desperately wanted to save these lost souls from their eventual destruction, but this was becoming almost a hopeless cause for the young king, as these people could not rid themselves of their past programming. The noble king would send out prana crafts to drop food into the outer regions, but these actions only created more violence and murder, as the citizens had no concept of sharing or love, only greed and complete love of self. Even brother would kill brother over a day's supply of food. Lingam would often reflect back on the words of his grandfather. Enslaved man will always sell what little soul he has left for food. Lingam now sits upon his throne as tears fall from his eyes that now gaze down upon the stone statue of Mandorla. It was placed in the center of the garden, next to that mystical giant oak. Now only the memory of their first elder lives on, frozen in stone, forever. Lingam then stands to observe the divine glory of the setting sun. Canis Major. The Order of El were able to survive on Mars. They remained mostly isolated within the doomed city of Sephiroth. They had greenhouses located all over Sephiroth for the production of food. They were also able to consume the water on Mars. Over the years, they had slowly perfected their dark science. They had also developed a new type of prana craft. With this new technology, they were able to travel to other planets within the galaxy.
They sent out astronauts to try and find life on other planets and moons, but there was no life to be found. Most of their governmental structure remained on Mars. They had created their own life to be found. They had created their own prison, their own colleges to educate the youth on Mars, isolated in abysmal failure. There were many scientific laboratories to perfect their ancient technologies and dark sciences for their future return to Earth. The very elite blue blood class of the Order had left Mars and now lived close to Saturn on one of its many moons. This disc-shaped moon called Hyperion. It is from Hyperion that their new young charismatic leader sits upon his dark throne. His name is Canis Major. Canis Major was in his early 30s. His exact age was never substantiated, and nobody dared to ask questions. Canis was ruthless and ruled Hyperion with an iron fist. He had a deep voice that seemed to hiss like a serpent. From his giant castle on Hyperion, he planned their return and hoped to rule over all the people of Earth in the very near future. He now believed that they not only had the capabilities to return to Earth, but also to completely counteract the Ouroboros system. Canis knew from his intelligence service within the Chimera that the Ondines only controlled one quarter of the entire Earth. This meant that the remaining 70% could be theirs upon immediate return. Canis then called in his top advisors for a plan of action. He then sent his top advisors to return to Mars and bring their most influential scientists back to Hyperion. The name of this mad scientist was Dr. Nagus.
"Bring me Dr. Nagus now. It is time for an update on the status of androgyny."
Major's dark minions then left for Mars. It was time for the doctor to brief Canis Major on their secret program to completely enslave humanity, androgyny. A few days had passed, and Dr. Nagus had finally arrived on Hyperion. Upon arrival, he was immediately escorted to Canis Major for the debriefing. They made it to the dark castle of Canis Major. As Dr. Nagus enters into the castle, he looks around, only to see row after row of mind-controlled soldiers dressed in all black uniforms. They were all standing at attention, deep within a state of trance. He had heard that the mind-control drug, Illumidrone, had now been perfected, and from the looks of things, this was most certainly true. Canis Major was definitely in charge here. Dr. Nagus finally arrives to the royal hallway. He nervously walks down the long red carpet and up to the throne of Canis Major. He looks up at him like an obedient slave, anxiously awaiting the wise words from his dark master. Canis stares down at the doctor. Looking into the eyes of Canis Major is like looking into the eyes of the abyss. Canis then walks down from his throne with an arrogant walk, makes his way to the doctor.
"So, is androgyny ready? That is the only information I care to know. We must strike now while the Ondines only control a quarter of the Earth. If we can render Ouroboros impotent, and I most certainly believe we can, then we can move into Griffin and rule the world from the seat of Paradise. All of their labors will have been in vain, and once more the power of the Dark Serpent will push them out of the garden and into oblivion. For now is the time. Is androgyny ready, Doctor?" The doctor responds to Canis Major while sweating profusely.
"Androgyny is in fact ready, my lord. The system has been perfected, and I am quite confident that the frequency it will emit will completely render Ouroboros useless."
Canis then smiles like a snake, ready to inject his poison inside his prey.
"You see, we are the direct descendants of those fallen souls, rejected for their brilliance and hated for worshipping themselves as gods.
Now we have the perfect science and the perfect knowledge to rule this universe, for we were chosen by our fallen masters to do so. We have the bloodlines to prove our divine right to lord over humanity and beyond. Our isolation from Earth has only made us stronger. Our return will be nothing short of miraculous. The citizenry of the outer regions are nothing more than dumb peasant dogs and goy waiting and longing to be lorded over. They are without knowledge or history, and what little they do know will quickly be erased by the Illumidrone. They have been perfectly destroyed. We have molded them into perfect specimens to be ruled over. Canis Major then storms down the long red carpet that leads out of the royal hallway, while hundreds of his mind-controlled soldiers follow behind like apocalyptic demons drooling at the chance to commit mass genocide of the human race. Dr. Nagus then leaves for Mars. The time has come to deploy Androgyny. Now the army of Canis Major makes their way to the huge Prana crafts they have perfected. The return of the Order of the L has been initiated. Canis Major takes his seat on the throne with the command center of a huge Prana mothership. As this energy moves toward the Earth, Canis Major looks out of the window of the ship with anticipation. The Dark Lord of the Outer Regions will finally arrive. The Zionists might get their revenge. Mars once again will get its blood sacrifice.